Well, we're continuing in Romans 1 here. We could finish with Romans 1 and move to Romans 8. Time allows here. Theology allows. Okay, we left off at verse 17. And I guess it's, you know, we just finished that one up. The righteous out of faith shall live.
You were making a comment right toward the end of class about out of faith and in faith.
Oh, yes. Okay, well, it seems to be dealing with there's lots of commentary speculation on this, what out of faith into faith is. But it appears to, from all the study that I've done on it, to be connoting a progression of faith from one level of faith to another faith and coming out of one realm of faith into another level of faith, out of faith into faith. And it's in indicating a progression of the Christian life from one level of understanding and revelation and promises to another, you know, like in a real basic sense, out of the Old Testament faith into the New Testament, but more, you know, a lot more refined than that, a progressive, like from glory to glory and, you know, from strength to strength, that kind of a concept. Now, there may be more involved in that. There's, I think it's in Romans 2 a little bit later on, where he talks about justifying the Gentiles through faith, and there's a different preposition used for the Jew and for the Gentile, whether it's the through faith or in faith or something. I don't remember exactly which the prepositions were. That one's a little fuzzy to my mind right now, but this seems to be dealing most reasonably with a progression and coming out of one level and going into another level. So you've got that very directional thing, out of one thing into something else. And so, of course, you've got different cases for faith in both cases. X takes genitive and ace is taking accusative here. Yes.
It seemed like
right.
The way it was being expressed is that something's being revealed, talking about
yes.
The righteousness of God. It wouldn't seem to be speaking of the legal righteousness either.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's imputed to us, but it would be speaking of another kind of righteousness.
Well, the righteousness of God is being revealed out of faith into faith. Well, there can be a legal element in terms of course, the new covenant having more specific promises and actually coming into more of the full realization of it. But in one sense, of course, like you said, the just have always lived by faith, Old Testament and New Testament. And it says, according as it has been written, the just out of faith will live. But I think what he's getting at is that because the just live out of faith, they need to go from out of faith into faith. In other words, to progress in their understanding, the revelation, and so forth that they have so that they will live by faith. In other words, the very fact that we say justification by faith and living by faith is knowing the way God is an indication that we are in submission to the will and plan of God. And that the more that he reveals to us, the more we act upon and so forth. That's kind of going back to the tree of life rather than the tree of knowledge, good and evil. We are receiving and partaking of him every day. And, of course, that's leading us into a progressive depth in our relationship with him. So I think it applies to the legal and then can carry us into the experiential also in certain respects, out of faith, into faith in that sense as well. But it's being revealed. And, again, the righteousness of God is being revealed. And certainly the righteousness of God was revealed more clearly in Christ than it was in Moses, for example. And yet, those at the time of Moses, if they were to be justified, had to be justified by faith. Those at the time of Christ, if they're to be justified, must be justified by faith. But the faith is more complete, more full, more rich, more detailed in Christ than it was earlier. Even though in both cases it's dealing with justification by faith. So it's being revealed. So that's quite an interesting passage there. Lots could be written and spoken about that. Okay, verse 18 then. Does anybody remember who left off yesterday? Or we can just go ahead and start with John then. He's always a good one. Huh? Okay, you read 17?
Well, I'll take John's
place. Okay, go ahead, Price. We'll let you take verse 18. I think he was prepared for it anyway. All right.
Apo kalu tetai jar. Orge, Teu, Ak, Uranu, Epi, Pasan, Ashtabeon, Kai, Adikion, Anthropon, Ton, Tain, Alepeon, Bin, Adikia, Adikai?
Yeah, Adikia.
Kia.
Mm-hmm.
discuss their hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's got to be wrapped up the for the four gays at wrap.
Yes.
Okay, for the wrap of God is from heaven.
Yeah, is being revealed from heaven. Apocalyptai is being revealed.
From heaven. Upon all.
Mm-hmm. They translate this ungodly. It's lack of godly respect is the idea, a lack of worship, that type of thing, lack of veneration. So, huh? I'm not sure on that one. It doesn't have the word God in it.
Would be
the
another, which is good.
Yeah, that has El as a root there. Yeah, that's the one that's translated what? How's it translated in King James?
Well,
godly piety or something, godliness. Yeah, the mystery of godliness, I think it's in that verse. So, it seems to have, I don't think I've done a thorough word study on this, but it seems to have the idea of worship and, acknowledging of his position.
I think I heard Don mention one time, and I looked it up in Vines, that this word deals with irreverence toward God himself and his
right.
nature.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this negation with the alpha on the front would have a negation of the positive effect, and it seems to be attacking that. His position is nature.
Same word was I'm trying to look it up now. When he was sure in that he feared.
Yes, yeah, probably the same thing. I would guess it'd be the same thing because it's translated piety sometimes.
Piety, yeah.
Godly fear.
That's in five.
That could be the Elisabeus. It could have that root there.
Remember the exact
version? Oh yes, let me think.
Five. I think five.
Yeah, 5, 7, or 8. Hebrews. It's a word that's used frequently enough, and it's translated godliness and so forth, but it really doesn't have the word God in it, so it's not maybe the best translation. But
it's eulabe.
Okay.
So it's got that root in there, something to do with that.
That's probably a good word to do a thorough word study on, and study all the roots and so forth of it, and the various combinations. Okay, well, we'll just translate it, I suppose, God, and it's familiar with. Yeah, right.
All you're ungodly, and,
Get that one in Jude where it says all their ungodly deeds that the ungodly committed and ungodly,
Yeah.
It's
some kind of name, I don't know what kind.
Adekion, so dikaios is righteous, so adekios would be unrighteous. Yeah, unrighteousness. This is actually a noun, so it's referring upon the wrath of God is revealed from heaven upon all ungodliness and unrighteousness, anthropon of men, unrighteousness of men. The same word there,
Jude.
Jude, yeah, okay. Okay.
The truth in righteousness is.
Yes, it's from
echo
and kata, so it means to have down, literally. So the idea is to hold down or suppress, to have something down.
Mm-hmm.
They're suppressing the truth. So what you have here is the ungodliness, the unrighteousness of men, the ones, this tone is kind of referring back to anthropon, tone, the truth in unrighteousness are holding down. The ones holding down the truth and unrighteousness. So the tone is really the article for the katekon tone, the participle, in opposition to anthropon. But you have this whole phrase, tein aletheon in adekia. That whole phrase is functioning like an adjective. But since it is a participle, it could also be construed and probably better construed as the object and an adverbial phrase, preposition phrase, of the verb holding down. So the holding down the truth and unrighteousness. That's, what does King James says? Who hold the truth and unrighteousness, I think.
Yeah.
But the idea of holding it isn't really quite accurate. It's the idea of holding it down. The idea is suppressing it, suppressing the truth because of their sin. And, of course, that applies quite abundantly to the situation they're out there in the world. Okay. Verse 19, then Dale, I guess you'd be next.
The OG told a strong tooth that was on our own husband and our toys. Both the old star, our toys, upon their own sin.
Okay.
Therefore, the knowledge of God.
Yes, this is translated as the thing known, or the known thing of God. So gnosis is more the word for knowledge, but gnoston is the thing known. It's got the neuter idea here, neuter participle probably, something similar anyway. Let me check and see if they listed it under here. They may just have it as a noun. They probably do. They probably just got it listed as a noun. But it's the thing known, that which may be known of God is the way the King James translates it, but it's the known thing of God. The thing that can be known of God.
Known of God.
Phanero'o is to manifest, and this is apparently an adjective built from that. So you've got esten phaneron. He is manifest.
Where God has manifested.
Yes.
God has made it known to them.
Right. For God has manifested it to them. Okay, so the thing, therefore that which is known of God, or the thing known of God, is manifest in them, for God has manifested it to them. All right. Questions, anyone? Yes, Greg?
I get the understanding of the OT saying, therefore, that would, in common English, that would mean there's some reason back up in verse 18 or maybe 3.
Right.
I'm wondering, is that the revelation of the wrath, or what specifically is he tying in?
Well, it's kind of bridging a gap here. What you find he's doing functionally in the entire chapter here is he's going to be introducing in this next section the reason why the Gentiles are in the darkness that they're in, and it's because they rejected truth when they had it. And he's in verse 18. He's explaining why. See, the wrath of God is revealed upon all ungodliness of men, and so forth. And so therefore, that which may be known of God, and so forth, because of the fact that he's just established that God's judgment is going to be brought upon those who rejected him, then he starts in verse 19 with a whole dissertation that's going to continue for a number of verses. It says, therefore, because of the fact that God brings wrath and so forth, he starts out at the beginning point. I think that therefore may have to deal with the whole concept that's coming. Either that, or it could have something to do with verse 17 in the terms of the righteousness of God being revealed. Because, we've got the righteousness of God being revealed and the wrath of God being revealed in verses 17 and 18. And then he's going on to explain what the position of men is. Therefore, since God's righteousness is revealed to some and God's wrath is revealed to some, God has manifested his truth to everyone, so if they would receive that, they could have his righteousness revealed. If not, they'll have his wrath revealed. So it seems to be what's going to happen. Now he's going to describe exactly why those Gentiles got in the position they did. And so D-O-T, of course, might be translated literally through which, D-A plus H-O-T, and so we translated therefore, or through which, because of which, perhaps even, because of which fact, or therefore, any of those would be possible translations.
But I'm wondering, is it also possible that might refer to something in the future, for instance, in the next verse, that because God manifested it to them, therefore that which is known of God, as it were.
Oh, I see. Yeah, within that phrase itself.
And it will therefore be speaking of something future, like some kind of guard, and things like that.
Well, yeah, if you're dealing with the structure of a clause, because word order isn't as important, you could be getting your condition, the consequent before the condition. And let me think about it here. It could be, I think what you're saying is that the wrath of, or God has manifested it to them, therefore the thing known of God is manifest in them. Is that what you're getting at? That's a possibility, too, within that verse. Usually when you're making a connective, though, and I mean the normal pattern, since it's involved in a whole narrative, If you're starting off with that, your mind is naturally wanting to go to the things that went before it. So there might be a debate on that, but I think it's really going to end up in the same position, because his statement here in verse 19 is predicated upon what's gone before. And so it's kind of leading you to a certain position now. Now that I've established all this, we can see a connection between these concepts. Okay, Glenn?
I'm going to ask about Epharneros in there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody I've been listening to, you're always putting it in there.
Yes.
But it's like there's no it. It's
right.
And I was wondering whether you have to take that, transitively, or whether it's just God has manifested to them. You know, because that's what it says. It's all just God has manifested. Do you have to imply an it, or could you just say himself then?
Well, the problem with is manifested is that that would be a passive form. To say God is manifested to them puts it as that God is the one that's being manifested. And here it seems that God manifested to them. So if you wanted to just say God manifested to them and leave an it off. But see, it is a transitive verb, and this has got an active form. So that kind of pushes you into looking as God as the subject. Huh?
So he's got to have manifested something.
Yes.
And whether that's himself or not, it's not stated.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think what is really... what it's really dealing with is the togonoston in the previous clause. See, oftentimes in Greek they won't repeat a thing if it's obvious that it's referring to the same thing in the previous clause. So that's probably where the it is coming from, referring to the known thing in the previous clause.
Is it invalid then to really presume that it could be that he's manifesting himself?
Well, I that's probably not the way it would probably not be worded that way. Now, of course, theologically speaking, the known thing, that which may be known of God, would be himself in the sense of the logos, the expression of himself. So, and I think you're right theologically, but grammatically you may not be able to, you know, prove that point on the basis of this clause alone. But the fact is that the known thing of God, you see, is that which may be known of God, and that's the thing that's being manifested. So in a sense it is indeed God that's being manifested. His knowledge, his revelation, his nature, and so forth, that's coming forth to the extent that we can receive it.
Probably wouldn't want to really say that's why he puts the known thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
That the God was manifested to them, because what he's going to say later is that what was is the things around us.
Yes, it's the creation. The very next verse. It's the very next verse is speaking of all of his creation, and certainly we don't want to equate his creation with himself in the way that a pantheist would. So he's avoiding this pantheistic idea. But by the same token, there's a logos concept, you know, of an expression of God, and this creation is indeed part of that. Okay. Good. Verse 20. Who's up next? John? Yeah, he can get us into the thought here.
Κατορατάι, χέτε, αίδιος, αυτού δυναμίς, καί θεοτές, έστω ειναι αυτοίς αναπολογέτος τους.
Okay.
For the aorata.
Mm-hmm. This is from probably from Horao in the negation. Means unseen,
the
invisible.
The things seen of him.
Yeah, the things unseen.
What?
The things unseen. You got the alpha on the front.
Okay.
So the unseen things. Yeah.
So the unseen things of him from the foundation of creation.
Creation of the world.
For the unseen things of him from the creation of the world to the things made.
To the things made. Mm-hmm.
No woman.
This is being perceived. This is perceived from nous. This is the word for mind. So this has got the idea of apparent to the mind or something like that. Perceived.
So, of him from the foundation of the world to things made are
okay, this is going to be kind of interesting translation-wise. Kathorata, yeah, the down, seeing down, yeah.
Down,
yeah. So you've got...
I guess understood is what it
is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the idea of seeing down is in a sense of fully understanding and so forth.
Understood.
Clearly seen or understood.
Understood in the perceiving or in the perception?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure a way to translate this to... they usually give clearly seen for both of those, I think. The perceived and seen down. Yeah, I wasn't aware that that's... It's as interesting as it is there. Let me check something over here. Okay, the nu'umana is a neuter participle, passive participle from no'e'o. And the kathoratai is present indicative passive, third person singular. So that's your finite verb. It looks kind of like an infinitive.
Is it perhaps?
Probably deponent, maybe. Clearly seen. Well, no, it probably is a passive idea. It's seen, because it's the thing that is seen.
We're clearly seen.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably what they're doing is by the things made. Let's see.
So for the things seen of him from the foundation of the world are clearly seen.
Mm-hmm. And then you might say by the things that are made or through the thing, you know, just the dative.
By the things that are made.
Mm-hmm.
To the things that are made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think we'll just stick with that now. It's probably worthy of a lot more study here in this combination of this being perceived. But they're giving, most of them are giving clearly seen here. So.
Okay.
Looks like it's full of a lot more meaning.
And which
Well, I'm not sure. They give it as eternal, and I haven't. Of course, normally it's Ionios, so idios could be. They're translating eternal here, eternal power and Godhead.
Hmm.
So, you know, we may need to check that word.
Eternal or everlasting.
Mm-hmm. I don't think this word is used nearly as frequently in the New Testament, but
okay, so
this is, you might put this in apposition to the unseen things of him and the, even his eternal.
The cat really doesn't have much translation value then here, does it?
Well, you're usually translating even.
Oh.
No, like, when you see it like that, it's often positioned even because you've got an appositional construction.
Even. Godhead.
Right.
Into being of his apologetic.
Yeah. This is, I mean, you've heard the word apologetic. This is the I think it looks like it's negation, but it means defenseless. Defenseless, without excuse, without an apology. Into their being without excuse. Right. So that they are without excuse, or into their being without excuse. You've got this into with an infinitive of the verb to be, giving that idea of result or purpose. In this case, it would be result. So with the result that are into the state of their being without a defense. Yes.
Theological question.
Mm-hmm.
And it ties into the grammar too. Tois poiemus and noumena. Could that possibly be talking about people? Because it's saying for the un-
Well, being understood by the ones being made. Okay. I see what you're saying there. By the things. Well, let's see. It would depend on what this tois poemas in. Let's see what kind of a participle that is. It doesn't list it here in the parsing guide. Looks like a present participle. If it is, of course, you'd get that. You better check it and make sure. If it's the things being made or in the process of being made, then you have more of an open door for that kind of concept. If it's things that were made already, it probably is speaking more of the creation itself. But I think, well, in a general sense, it's true of everything in the creation, and that includes man, of course. That'd be one of the most important testimonies of God's power. And then, of course, if you add the spiritual thing, the spiritual process of being made, but of course, at that point in time, they're just getting started with this, so they don't have probably a lot of testimony in that respect. But that is indeed one of the most graphic testimonies that any man is going to have, is to see the life of another person transformed by the power of God, and that testimony is really, really effective and powerful.
Plural of poema.
Oh, so it's a noun. Yeah, poema. Okay, no wonder they didn't list
it
here.
The made things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the things made. So it's not really getting any verbal aspect to it. So the things made. Okay, being perceived. The invisible things are clearly seen, being perceived by the things that are made. Yeah, that seems to swing it more in favor of the actual physical creation roundabout that they're seeing.
Or being perceived in...
In the things that are made, yeah. Being perceived in the things that are made or by the things that are made. You've got this dative sense here. Being perceived with reference to the things that are made, I suppose, might be the raw idea. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I've heard someone mention that a few years ago, and I thought, I wonder if that's...
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't say that the idea is wrong, you know, I mean, that's part of the things that are made, and it's being made now, but it seems to be focusing on, at the starting point, you see, theologically, when you see what the development of this is, this seems to be the starting point. Creation is a testimony to all men, and then in history and time past, men rejected that knowledge, that light that they had, so the whole context seems to favor more the idea of the initial creation itself. It would certainly include man, but it may not be getting into so much of the spiritual end of things, at least at this point in this context. Now, of course, I think you can extend the principle to to people now. They're seeing even more than they saw back then. They're not only seeing the physical creation, but they're seeing God's new creations coming forth, and that's going to put them in a greater position of judgment if they reject it. So I think you can safely conclude that, but that's probably not the main import of this particular verse. As far as the specific details. Yes, John?
Is this on acting in front of the anapologi?
Oh, it looks like it's acting as a negative.
Negative.
Yeah.
I've only seen ah.
Yeah, normally it's ah, but you have a problem when you put an ah in front of an ah.
Right.
So that may be just a bridging thing. You know, it's either that or it's on ah. You know, it's either that or the preposition on. It doesn't look like it's on in this case because of the fact that I'm familiar with apologetos, you know, and then now you've got a negation of it. So that's probably what's happening here. You just get two vowels in a row, and they don't like that, so they put a nun in there. Yes?
I had two questions. One was kata rata. I heard that kata is always down, and it seems like when it's in with the compound, but it's also translated according to.
I'm
if there's any way that you might use that type of a meaning with this verb here, or according to the thing that is being we're able to make the judgment that there are invisible things.
Well, I think it's the root idea is down, and according to comes from certain that idea plus context. And what the precise sense of this is, usually when it's a part of a verb, when you see kata as a part of a verb, it's good to at least start with the concept of down, but it's going to be sometimes, it's going to take on various connotations. Like to see down, it's got more, there's a certain kind of a precision element that you often see in there. When you put a kata in front of it, it seems to kind of focus things. It's right down on this point. You're seeing, it's, so you can see the idea of an accurate seeing. It's like it's focused right down on this point. Sometimes it's in the sense of a judgment or, you know, a casting down or a kata krino, a judging down, sense of judgment. And so I think that's where you need to start on a verb form, is to look for the meaning of it. All the ones that I've been familiar with so far, the idea of according to can be seen in the sense that, you know, like the gospel according to John, gospel down John, as it were, literally. It's and we translate it according to because he's the one that's writing it down, as it were. And so, and we're looking at it, and he's the one that's placed it down there for us to see. And so that's the idea of according to. He's laid it down for us to see. And so I think even there you want to keep that kind of a central idea there. The pure idea of according to, we might see more with a dia or something like that, or dia with accusative, or, you know. You know, I'm not saying according to isn't proper here, just as far as kata is concerned, but it's really context and other things that they're putting that whole thing together and trying to bring it over in English. Okay, who else had another point?
One other question was, this word, theotos?
Yes, theotes. Mm-hmm.
I've always been kind of wondering what is the distinction between that word and the word in Colossians
2:9. Okay.
A little different than
the other one. Yeah, is the other one theotetos, or?
Yeah.
Okay, they're really the same word in different case. Theotetos is genitive, I think, and this is, let's see, then this is nominative. So that's the only real distinction. In other words, it's the dictionary form of it. And if you look it up in let me double check now, unless there's any other subtle differences, but I'm pretty sure it's the same thing.
I don't think there's an iota.
Oh, there isn't? Okay. That could be a variation. It might be a variation spelling, it might not be, so we might need to check that. But Colossians 2:9.
Variation.
Okay, theotetos. Yeah, there's no iota in that one.
They show that ending, though, back here in my little dictionary. It gives theotes and theotetos.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives the etos ending. So.
Oh, it does. Okay, well, that is a genitive ending. The nominative form is theotes, but I don't think it has the iota in it in the Colossians passage. So that could afford a... It afford a difference. It looks like it's probably a difference, though, on the basis of a spelling variation. The only difference would be the iota from the dictionary form. Now, that'd be interesting to check that one and see if they list it under both of those or give a variant spelling or what.
Oh, I see. Well, they list it in both here.
In the back of your book?
Yeah.
You list theotetos, do they say it's genitive?
Well,
it's theotetos. It's clearly a genitive form.
Two different words, and maybe two different spellings. And all, but they list them both without the iota, but they also list theotes and theotetos without the iota.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be.
Now see what
there's a dictionary form theotes
without the iota. Yeah, I know that.
And we also
question is whether this.
Iota.
Okay, and they get the same meaning for both of them.
Well, deity and Godhead for the second one. Deity and divine nature for the first one, so maybe some slight distinction or something.
Maybe a very slight distinction. But it looks like it's most probably a spelling variation. Okay, I hadn't noticed that before. Good. But I'd be very surprised if there's anything radically different about it. They're all translating pretty much the same in both places. What we know, whether they say nature in one place or Godhead. That word Godhead means almost nothing. Probably in Old English, it had a different connotation than it does now. Yes?
Just for my clarification, was the new Umana, the Thorotai, that was the new Umana was clearly seen?
No, the clearly seen is kathoratai. The noumena is being perceived. In other words, the whole sense would be for the unseen things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, kathoratai, being perceived by the things that are made. So you might want to put a parenthesis, you know, tois poi emasin noumena, that all goes together, being perceived by the things that are made. And then is clearly seen is kind of tying up in the main clause, main structure. So the unseen things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, seen down, being perceived, noumena, by the things that are made, tois poi emasin. Okay. Any other questions or comments on this? Now, that is an interesting variation in the spelling. It'd be worth checking out in a more extensive work and see how many times the word is used in the New Testament. If it's were used any more times than these, and see if there's, you know, a split up in the spelling of it consistently, or if there is a slightly different connotation in one of these. Probably going to be awful hard to establish. Doubt if there's that many uses of the term. Yeah. Okay, verse 21. Jim.
Dioti nomke tonteon tuk hoseon edoxan e super gristetan of emat tyrobasan entois elogis mois auto pae es kut tiste e ap auto cardia. Therefore, I think that they knew.
Or having known. Having known, it's participle. So it is referring to them, but you might say because through which, on the basis of which, having known God.
Okay.
Circumstantial participle.
Okay.
So while they knew God, or having known God, or at the time they having known God.
Okay. While they knew God, not as God, they glorified
or thanked. So they didn't. They neither glorified nor thanked him. You know, did they? Okay.
But
as God. They became vain. Is what they give here. So they became vain. It's probably got the idea of emptiness or something in it.
In there with that imagination.
In their dialogis mois is the reasonings.
In their reasoning and
or imagination, I think they might give for that, but the idea of vain in their imaginations. The idea of their reasonings, thinking through or
and having been darkened.
Foolish again. This is, and I'm not sure on this. This looks interesting. It looks like if the root is from soon, it'd be soon means together, and asun would be not together. So I'm not positive on that. Let me check and see if I can find. Well, no, they just got it as a noun, asunatos. So they've got it unintelligent here. I think King James says foolish. We had another word for foolish earlier, without, you know, having no mind or something, mindless. Senseless. This is different. So I don't know. It's just my guess. Without comprehension, they give it. When the word is used later on, verse 31, they give it without comprehension. So. Okay, so the unintelligence of their heart, something like that. Okay. Their unintelligent heart, I suppose, was darkened. So their unintelligent heart was darkened, or their foolish heart was darkened. Whatever. Okay. Any other questions there, as far as...
Do you think there's a truth in the particular and our truth that own having known the God, even glorifying...
As God, without the article.
...expression...
Yeah, I think what it's dealing with, having known the God, knowing him in identity and his person, you know, and so forth, they did not glorify him as God, and they did not acknowledge his position, his quality, and his nature, and so forth. So I think there is an appropriate reason for no article in the last one. It's they didn't acknowledge that nature and quality and characteristic of him as being God. So they had evidence that he existed, the person of God was there, and they knew that. They didn't acknowledge him in his position. They did. So that seems to be the problem. And then neither did they thank him. But in contrast, they became vain, became empty in their reasonings. This reminds you of the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And the rejection of light is the whole picture here. So they're not acknowledging his qualities, his position, and so forth, his characteristics as God. Okay. Good. Lots of things you notice here when you look at it in Greek that you never would notice otherwise. That's why it'd be good for us to go through the entire New Testament, really. That should be a requirement for every Christian. Learn Greek and go through the New Testament. I don't think we're going to get very far with that, though, for everybody. But if you have the opportunity sometime, I don't know when you'll do it. I haven't had the opportunity yet, but it would sure be an edifying thing to do. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I haven't had a chance to really get with him on it. We're going to be all swamped till school's out, but I'm hoping this summer to talk to him about that and see what we can do toward getting a class or something for some of the Greek students. I might mention that now. How many of you do you think would be interested in having a class, either in Greek or in Hebrew or both, you know, or two sections of it or something like that, where we just will basically do is bring the students in, and this would be especially good for ones that have had it in the past and haven't done much with it. Be able to get them all together and start, you know, we wouldn't even have to have a formal instructor. You could have somebody that would moderate it and so forth and keep things together, but go through sections of scriptures, kind of like we're doing here, and maybe get into some of the theological implications and for review and brush up and excelling in actually using it. And it would be probably for one or two credits, something like that. You know, it would be a class. It wouldn't involve a lot of homework, but it would be in class type of thing. How many of you feel like you'd be interested in taking that if it would be? Okay, well, good. Well, we'll use that for ammunition.
You got 11 right now.
Yeah. I've had other people talk to me about it, too, and had expressed some kind of interest. So we'll see. I'll be talking to Don about it this summer, and maybe, who knows, might even be able to squeeze it in the schedule next year, or if not, the year after.
Mm-hmm. Class in the curriculum or something that would apply in the master's program?
Well, we'll have to talk that over. You know, we could probably work some credits for graduate program on that. I don't think there'd be any problem with that, although we can't probably work too many in. In other words, we don't want to overbalance it. But that'll be something we'll have to decide.
Right. Depending on how it's structured, if there's more research and that type of thing.
Yeah.
You'd probably want to go for master's credit.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just brush up and translating.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, if it was just a brush-up course or something, a refresher course, that's probably not what we do. But we conceivably maybe have a quick review of basic grammar first, just to remind, you know, the ones that haven't, the cobwebs are, you know, in the brain and so forth, you got to clean them up. And then it's actually getting in and translating.
Sometimes the best way to clean
cobwebs
out is to walk through the room.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. Good point. Okay. Well, that's good. It's good to know that there's an interest, and we'll see what we can come up with on that. Okay. We've got enough people that have had Greek now that I think we could have a pretty good forum there. And we could adjust this thing to whatever purposes we wanted, even, you know, having teachers feed in certain theological passages and needed exegesis done on or something, so they could be working on that, or any number of things. Okay, and it'd be good just to have the kind of a scanning thing, you know, nobody's got the time to really go through the entire thing. If we could take a book at a time or something and then just have the class note any kinds of points of theological interest and feed them to the appropriate teachers or something on it, well, that could really be a benefit too. All right, well, something to think about. Romans 1:22 then, who's up next? Glenn.
Thoughts from testing
Okay.
Two out of the four words I don't know.
All right, and those are the two most important ones.
Meaning, you know, something.
Yeah. This means to profess or to assert Fosco is what it's from. It says here, asserting to be wise ones.
They were made fools.
Yeah, they were made fools. Yeah, that's passive. It's an aorist passive. So they were made fools. So asserting themselves to be wise, or asserting to be wise, they were made fools.
Okay, what's the root on that?
Okay, that is from Moraino. We get moron from that. That's the truth. It's mu omega rho, alpha iota nu omega. And it's from fool. There's a word for fool. It's a noun that's from that. I can't remember what it is. But I think we get moron from that same root.
Or accent. Or professing themselves to be wise ones.
Yes, to be wise ones. That's right. It is a plural noun. So professing themselves to be wise ones, they were made foolish. Okay. God doesn't mince any words about this. I mean, he really uses graphic description of what's happening. Okay. And verse 23. Mark.
Kai Elak-san, Tain Do-san, Tu, Afartu, Sa'u, and Humoi Omati, Eikono, Afartu, Androku, Kai,
All kinds of new things here. This this first verb is from alaso. It means, remember alelos, where we have each other, one another? It means to exchange. They exchange. The King James says changed, but it doesn't have the idea of modifying something, but it's exchanging or trading. Mm-hmm. So they traded, they exchanged.
They exchanged the glory of
incorruptible, yeah. Because starto has got the idea of corruption, so aftharto is incorruptible God.
Incorruptible God. In the likeness of corruptible,
into, you might even translate it into, in this case, in English, but in, exchanged in, you know.
Into the likeness of the image of corruptible man.
Right.
And
this is the word for birds, but it's flyers, literally. Petenon.
And birds, and must be four-footed ones.
Yes, four-footed ones, exactly what it is. Four-footed ones.
Creepy crawling things?
Yes, creepy crawling things, yeah. Yeah, well, herpetology, you've heard of herpetology, is, you know, people who are involved in, you know, snakes and lizards and reptiles. So herpetone is creeping things. That's what they give it here. So it's anything creepy, you know. Usually lizards and, you know, I don't know if the term herpetology covers only snake. You know, usually I've heard it with reference to snakes. But this seems to involve any kind of snakes and amphibians and reptiles and so forth that are unpleasant, I suppose. Okay. All right. And that's so typical. I mean, he's describing the idolatry of the heathen and what happened. And he's making it very clear that they knew God, did not honor him as God. They did not like to retain him in their knowledge, as we'll see a little bit later on. And they exchanged, they traded the glory of the uncorruptible God for the likeness of an image of a corruptible man, of birds, four-footed things, creeping things. You look at all the Egyptian stuff, you know. I noticed that about the King Tut exhibit. Probably wouldn't have gone to that if we had deliverance then. But there was so much. I mean, everything, all the animals and things that they picked for symbols, you know, it's always the creepy things. It's always the alligators, the cobras, you know, things like that. And it's not sweet little bunny rabbits or things like that. You know, it's always something like that. Okay. Question?
I was wondering if Ekonos is singular?
Yes, it's singular and genitive. So it's in the likeness of an image of corruptible man.
But they go to singular man, mm-hmm. plural everything else.
Oh, yeah. Well, very often it's a...
So it's image tied only to image of man, and then also these things and these things and these things.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, it's possible. Let's see, what genitive... Okay, so these... okay, they're all genitives. Yeah, it's probable then that it's the likeness that they're all referring to, in the likeness of an image of a corruptible man and of flyers and so forth. It's likeness of flyers, likeness of this, and so forth. That's what it seems to be, because the rest of them are all genitive phrases. And likeness is dative. So we've got likeness, and then we've got a series of genitive phrases attached to that, the first one being singular, referring to man, and the rest of them being plural, referring to the birds and the four-footed beasts and creeping things and that type of thing. So the fact that man is singular here, it's almost got the singling this thing out. It's almost, in my mind, it's seeming to go even beyond an image. It could refer to, you know, the image of Nebuchadnezzar set up and some of those things, but maybe even beyond that into this kind of a humanistic concept, the image of man. I mean, whether they actually worshipped idols that were shaped like men, or whether it's referring to setting up man as a thing, the image of the beast almost, you know, when we get to the end and so forth, that's kind of an interesting connotation there. Yes, Greg.
Seeing that all this is in the air, a lot of these groups are, is this only, you know, would we have the liberty to say that this applies to men as well today?
Oh, I think we do. I think we do, because, you see, he's describing how they got to the state that they're in. So it's historical in that sense. And he's trying to tell the story of, why do we have these Gentile nations in darkness that we have? And so he says, because these things happened. But the fact that those things happened is a testimony that that's the state that they're in today, and they're still in that state. So, there, of course, and you can clearly find other scriptures, too, that will corroborate that. You can go to 1 Corinthians, for example, and get a list of the same kind of description you find in Romans 1. So you can see that, yes, they still remain in that state. But this is kind of just the reason for the errors, primarily to show that how they got that way and what happened in the course of history to bring them to this point. And then, of course, he'll do it with the Jews, too, in chapter 2, and show the reason why the Jews need a Savior. So in chapters 1 and 2, he's trying to bring all of the Gentile nations under condemnation, as it were, not in the sense of trying to condemn them, but show them that the law condemns them, why they need a Savior. And the Jew also, in chapter 2, why they need a Savior. And chapter 3 kind of gives the answer to it. Okay, who's up next? Got maybe half a minute here. I don't know if I can get it. All right, Dale, 10 seconds. Speak fast.
Yeah, I was joking.
Get your tongue tied up. You could almost hurt yourself doing that. Okay. We'll let you stop here, and we'll pick it up tomorrow.